We hope you find this WILL podcast to be valuable. A $10 voluntary credit card contribution at willpledge.org will help us continue to make podcasts of our programs available. Thank you. And that address again is willpledge.org. willpledge.org. Now here's your program.
This is the Afternoon Magazine on Illinois Public Media, AM 580, 90.9 FM, HD2, and online at will.illinois.edu. Good afternoon, I'm Celeste Quinn. As October of last year, October of 2009, drew to a close, Nina Sankovic crossed the finish line in a marathon of sorts. It wasn't a race. It was more like a quest. 1 year earlier, she had set out to read one book a day. She said she was looking for a way to endure sorrow and grief and find resilience in the face of losing her older sister to cancer a few years earlier. Nina Sankovic is our guest this afternoon. We'll talk with her about what she calls the 365 Project, what she found in the challenge and gained as a result of meeting the challenge. We'll talk about some of the books she read and what she's reading now. Listeners, I hope you'll join us this afternoon with a phone call. Join us with your questions and comments, your thoughts about reading great books. I look forward to hearing from you. If you're in the Champaign-Urbana area, the number is 333-9455. We also have a toll-free number. That number is 800-222-9455. Nina Sankovic, our guest, is a former environmental lawyer. She earned her law degree from Harvard. She's married and is mother to four boys and a stepdaughter. Soon, Nina Sankovic will be the author of a book. She's working on a book about her year of reading to be titled Tolstoy and the Purple Chair. Look for our guest online at www.readallday.org. There you will find a wealth of resources about books and reading, as well as reviews of each book Nina Sankovic read. 333-9455, the number in the Champaign-Urbana area. Toll-free 800-222-9455. Nina Sankovic, it's good to talk with you. How are you?
Hi, I'm fine. Thank you. How are you?
I'm fine, thank you. Well, tell us how you decided to embark on this project.
Well, there are a lot of forces that came together that pushed me to take on the year of reading. As you mentioned in your intro, my oldest sister had died of cancer in 2005 after a very brief illness, and I found myself approaching middle age, really bewildered and sad and unsure of where I was going and what I should be doing with my life. And I decided that for 1 year I would do what I really love to do, which is read, and I would do it intensely. I would do it with the goal of promoting adult literacy and reading, and also the goal of finding for myself some answers on how to live my life and how to keep on going in the face of really debilitating sorrow. And so I began. I started a book a day and took off for a year.
Yeah. What did you start with?
I started with a book my mother had given me, The Elegance of the Hedgehog by Muriel Barberry, and it was a wonderful start. It was a book really about finding moments of joy in life and holding on to those moments to get you through the sadder parts of life. I read it on the train going into New York City, finished it up on the train coming out again, and I thought, wow, this is going to be a great year, and it was.
Yeah. Now, you wrote on your blog at the outset that you expected the year to be both intense and wonderful. Would you tell us about the intensity of the project?
Well, it was intense because every day I had a book to read, and first I had to figure out which book I was going to read for that day. I had to write the review for the book I had read the day before, and then I had to begin reading reading the new book. And even though I had things well planned out, I knew I had about 6 hours on my own every day when my four kids were off at school. I quickly found that life has a way of intervening. You get the phone call from the nurse that one of the kids has to be picked up immediately because he's throwing up. You find out that, you know, some other emergency has to be taken care of. And I, within the first week, I realized that a lot of my reading was going to be done late at night or sitting in a car waiting to pick someone up. As much as I like to read in my purple chair, that is the title of the book, I did reading wherever and whenever I could, and I did get it done, so that was intense. On the other hand, when you're sitting reading, you're not intense. You're absorbed in what you're reading, and those were incredible, peaceful moments. So I was able to find these moments of peace within a really crazy schedule.
Yeah, it also sounds like it could be exhausting.
I did not probably sleep the whole year as much as I should have slept, but it was worth it. It's fine.
Yeah. How did the family think about the idea? What did the family think about the idea?
Well, my family at first thought it was a little crazy, but my husband was very supportive. He said, you know, we can do this for a year, basically taking me out of the workforce and doing my own project for 1 year. He said, this is fine. We can do it. The kids were interested, but, you know, just thought it was one more of mom's projects, and as the year came to a close, I think we were all surprised at how smoothly it had gone, how supportive everyone became, and it just became part of the day. You know, hearing mom say, "I've got to go read now, leave me alone," and they hung in there.
Yeah. Now, do your kids enjoy reading?
They do, and we definitely had our moments when the whole family was sitting around reading, and I would look up and think, oh, my gosh, this is what I'm talking about. This is what I was going for. And those were good moments.
This is The Afternoon Magazine. Our guest this afternoon, Nina Sankovich. She spent a year reading a book a day. My name is Celeste Quinn. This is The Afternoon Magazine. Listeners, if you'd like to join us with a question or a comment, give us a phone call, 333-9455. That's 333-WILL. We also have a toll-free number, that number, 800-222-9455, 800-222-WILL. Listeners, maybe you could join us with some thoughts of your own in terms of what you find in books. Do you turn to them for solace? What are you reading now, and is there a book perhaps that you're looking forward to reading, and maybe you have a book you'd like to recommend for us this afternoon? Those kinds of comments and questions are invited. Anything else that's on your mind this afternoon, join us with a phone call, 333-9455, toll-free 800-222-9455. So what are you reading now?
Well, yesterday I read a book that an author sent to me. What happened after in early October, the New York Times ran an article about my project, and all of a sudden, a lot of people knew about it. I'd had readers of my website before, a lot of readers from all over the world, but with that one article in the Times, all of a sudden I had just so many readers and so many people calling me and saying, "Oh, will you read my book? Will you read my book?" And I tried to say yes as much as I could. And one book that I received, I just received it this week, was from a writer named Camilla Trinchieri. And the book is called The Price of Silence. I started it yesterday afternoon, and I stayed up till midnight to finish it. It was a great read. And when I get a book like that and start reading it, it just reminds me again, this is why I love to read, because it's both an escape and also an affirmation of what is so interesting about life and how much there is out there to experience and think about. So it's both an escape into life, but it's also an escape into life, what books can offer you.
Yeah. When you were in the midst of this project, how did your day unfold?
Well, the plan was that I would wake up, get the kids off to school, and then write the review of the book I'd read the day before. And usually the night before I'd written some kind of rough draft, my first impression. So I would write the review, post it, and then start reading. And that's pretty much how things worked out. But as I said before, life has a way of intervening. There were things I had to do for school and for family. And, of course, I had to make regular trips to the library to keep keep myself in stock. And I had to occasionally see friends, so they knew I was still around. So it was, there was no real typical day. When the summer started, I wasn't really sure how things would work out because my kids are basically home all summer. You know, they go to camps here or there during the day, but afternoons we're all back together again. And they were really great about, you know, a mom's in the backyard reading, you know, we'll have to figure it out ourselves this afternoon. And it worked out well. They definitely became more self-sufficient this year.
Yeah. How did you decide what you would read?
Well, at first I went to the library and I basically looked for books that were interesting and were about 1 inch thick. Because a 1 inch thick hardcover is about 300 pages. And I can read a 300 page book in about 4 hours. So that was good for, you know, for my schedule. So I looked for authors that I already knew, but I didn't allow myself to read any book I'd already read, nor during the year did I allow myself to read one author more than once. So it made me discover new writers, and my local library has a very good collection of not only what the big presses put out, but what small independent presses are putting out. So I was able to discover new writers really from all over the world in all different ages. And then as I started, the projects really started getting going, and I started getting more and more readers to the website. People sent me recommendations, sent me books, and I started to read more books that way, through recommendations and through just offerings through the mail. And that, again, opened up whole new writers I had never read before. And that is just another aspect of reading mm-hmm. that is so wonderful, is that you never will run out of books to read. There's always more authors to try, and it's just an inexhaustible resource of pleasure.
Yeah, well, your blog is just a great resource for people who are wondering, gee, what should I read?
Yeah, you know, I hope so. I hope it is.
Yeah, and I don't mean to be corny about this, but it's an inspiring site.
Well, thank you.
Yeah.
One thing that I found as the months went on is that readers who became regular readers also came to very much know what I'd like and so could really come to rely on my reviews. I mean, that was one value, I think, to them, is as they got to know me, they could trust which review, you know, they could trust my reviews. Oh, she likes that kind of book, so it makes sense she would like this. I'm going to like that. Or she likes these kinds of mysteries. Maybe she should try these. Let's see what she thinks of those. So I really developed relationships with a lot of readers, real back and forth as to what makes good writing, what makes a good mystery is different from what makes a good, you know, book of short stories. And so my ideas really developed alongside the ideas of my readers, and that was a nice connection.
What makes for a great short story? What makes for a great mystery?
Well, a great short story is so condensed that things have to happen within, you know, 10 or 15 pages, something usually pretty big is encased in something very small and provides the reader with a new way of looking at something. What a mystery does is it takes more time, a great mystery in my opinion, is it takes more time to slowly develop characters and plot. And it has more breathing room, more space to create all of the different elements that are going to go into it. At the end, you're going to say, wow, I didn't see that coming. Or if you did see that coming, you feel really good about yourself that you were able to figure it out. A good mystery usually answers a lot of the questions that it's raised, whereas a very good short story or novel will leave something unanswered, but will kind of put you on the path to figuring that out for yourself.
Did your thinking about what makes a book great evolve over the course of the year?
It did. I came more and more to realize that I really value an honest approach to writing, and I became much more prickly when I could tell an author was using a device or a style in a way to manipulate me and not as an authentic way of expressing what that author wanted to express. So I became much more demanding of an honest viewpoint versus a very stylistic or overly done manner of presenting a story. So I became kind of even ornery over books that I felt were overdone and dishonest.
Mm. One of the things you wrote about in the blog is the relationship between writer and reader. You say it's kind of a pact.
Yeah. Well, it's an interesting relationship because the writer, if the writer's honest and open and fearless, which I believe a great writer has to be, is really laying it out on the table and saying to the reader, now you're going to read that and you're going to make of it what you will. It will not be the same thing that I even meant, perhaps, because when you read a book, you're bringing your own experience to that book. But the writer is trusting the reader to read it openly, and the reader is trusting the writer to have been honest about it. So there will be some level of shared understanding. And then in addition to that, there will be each person's own experience. And then you meet another reader who's read the same book you've had, and they've had a completely different reaction to it. And I find that just really fascinating, really interesting, the relationship between what you yourself bring to the book and what the book has brought to you.
Mm. You note in the blog that your reviews of what you read are not typical. How are they atypical?
Well, I don't usually try to give a summary of the plot. My reviews are very visceral reactions to what I read the day before. I don't have a lot of time to develop what I'm writing. I put a lot of time into thinking about what I'm going to write, but I have another book that is waiting to get read that day, or I did that year. And so the reactions are very of the moment. And what was interesting is that I've always been a big reader, but having to write about what I read put the books more firmly in my mind and in my memory. I mean, it used to be someone would ask me, oh, have you read anything good lately? And I'd say, yes, but I really can't remember what it was. I'll get back to you. And during the year of reading, because I wrote down everything that I was reading, I definitely remembered more what I was reading. And my reviews are a sharing of my own personal reaction, less than a plot summary or an attempt to get people to buy or not buy a book.
Mm. And did the act of writing the reviews and writing an essay about the process every so often provide you new insights about books and reading, the act of reading?
Yes. Yes, very much so. And also provided me, it was almost like a writing therapy for myself because reading is a very personal act. When you examine what it is you like about a book, you're examining what you yourself value in life, in relationships, you know, with other people, what you want for yourself. So through the medium of the book, you find out so much about yourself and what is important to yourself. And having to write about it really made me see things about myself that I had not seen before, and things about my family that I had to cherish. And I really grew more open-minded about what it takes to, you know, to be a good person, that there are different ways of being a good person and leading a good life and different responsibility. We all have this responsibility to make the world a better place, but that happens in many different ways.
Mm. This is the Afternoon Magazine. Our guest this afternoon, Nina Sankovich. As October 2009 drew to a close, this fall, she crossed the finish line in a marathon of sorts. One year earlier, she had set out to read one book a day. She accomplished that. In addition to reading a book a day, she wrote about the books that she read, and she wrote about the act of reading. And you can find our guest online at her blog, www.readallday.org. My name is Celeste Quinn. Listeners, you can join us this afternoon with a phone call, 333-9455, the number in the Champaign-Urbana area, toll-free 800-222-9455. 855. Let's take a call from a listener in Champaign on line one. Hello.
Can you hear me okay?
Yeah, go ahead.
Okay, quickly, two comments. Let me just read a sentence or two from this book. For him, the library represented a Pyrian spring, that metaphorical source of knowledge and inspiration. I'll skip the rest of the paragraph. He ranked Don Quixote, along with Robinson Crusoe, Uncle Tom's Cabin, Gulliver's Travels, among the great works of world literature. In Robinson Crusoe, he perceived, quote, the development of the entire history of mankind. This is an interesting little book. It's called Hitler's Private Library. It's a book that was reviewed in the New York Times, and really, really kind of, it's about the books that shaped his life, and really interesting kind of book. Two, if you're familiar with Harold Bloom, the literary critic,
yeah.
The Western canon, and this is, he has a list of books, different ages of Western civilization, and I've counted, I don't know how you can count those, but somewhere between 1,000 to 5,000 books, and I've always been curious whether he or anyone else has read that, and in researching that, apparently, there was an interview where he mentioned he read 300 pages an hour with total comprehension, which I find a little bit incomprehensible. But those are my two comments. So the world of reading attracts all sorts, I guess.
Yeah, it does. What's interesting about the Western canon that Harold Bloom talks about, one thing that I think I demonstrated this year is that you can read outside of that canon. You do not have to read all the books on that list. You can find in books, in unexpected places, real gems of wisdom and moments of beauty and descriptions that are just unparalleled in perfection of that emotion or scene. And people become so interested in, oh, I have to read the canon. No, you can really go to your local library and pick a book and just start reading it and find such pleasure in that. And from there, you may then decide to try to read something, you know, from one of the great works. But you don't have to read one of the great works to read great literature.
And there are...
I would probably more or less agree with you.
Yeah.
But I'll hang up and listen. Great program, by the way. Thank you.
Thanks for the call this afternoon. Any thoughts about Hitler's private library?
Well, you know, Everyone reads books and takes different things from them. I have not read that, although I did see the review, and it is, of course, it's so interesting to think what does the monster of evil think is great literature? How is that different from what I think is great literature? And what are the what do we find in common? Interesting, really very interesting to see what people read and what they don't read and what they're scared of reading and what they're comfortable reading. One of my goals with my year of reading was to really point out that adults should be reading more, that there's not to learn more, but just to have pleasure in your life that is so comforting and enlivening. There is so much emphasis in the school system of how we have to have our kids read, you know, read 20 minutes a day, read 30 minutes a day, get your kids to read. And what I found is that there is much less emphasis on getting adults to read. Why not, why aren't there the same encouraging programs for adults? You know, just sit, you don't have to read, you know, some great book that's going to be very difficult. You can read a really pleasurable book and get a lot out of it. And I think that the world would be a better place if more adults took the time out to just put their feet up and read a good book.
Yeah, and there's so much to choose from.
Yeah.
You know, you can read about people, places, ideas, imagined or real.
Right.
You can be transported to a place you've never been before.
Right.
Were there books that you mentioned being scared of reading something. Was there a book or two that you were fearful of when you sat down and opened the cover?
Well, there are books that I knew were going to be very sad and tragic. For example, there is a wonderful book called The Assault by Harry Mulisch, who is a Dutch writer, and it is about an incident. It's a fictional account of an incident that occurs at the end of World War II, and a family is really hit hard by a tragedy that was not necessary. And it's especially painful because you know the war is almost over and it shouldn't have happened. And it was there's a question of mistaken identity and who did what, when, where. And so the whole notion of tragedy that could have been avoided but for a few bad decisions, those are books that are always so hard for me to read because I think that is very, very true, that we are saved from tragedy by just the barest of coincidence. And when it does hit us, we realize how unforeseen and unlucky that occurrence was. I mean, when my sister became ill with cancer and a very virulent form of it, you know, my family just could not believe that this was happening to us and happening to her, and that she was going to lose her life because of this horrible thing that could not be prevented, and we could not protect her against it. And so any books that I know are going to remind me of that very painful fact, I find difficult to read. But when I have read them, I do find, I don't want to say comfort, but I do find a brotherhood or a sympathy in knowing that I'm not alone in this, that so many people have had to suffer terribly, and yet the world does go on. You know, that's Colin McCann, you know, the title of his wonderful book, Let the Great World Spin. You know, that is, the great world does spin, and Paul Auster talks in his book, Man in the Dark, you know, the weird world rolls on, and yes, it does. It just rolls on, and thank God for that.
Yeah. Well, isn't it interesting that in a very solitary way, in the act of reading, we make connections?
Oh, it is so interesting and so true. Here you are alone in your chair, and yet you are really forming a connection with the writer, but with the whole community of readers who's also read that book. And Ian Forster, in his book Howard's End, you know, the main theme of that is we have to connect, just connect. That is the meaning of life. And my year of reading, I'd have to say that is what I took away, that is the meaning of life, to connect, whether it's through reading or through writing or through talking about what you're reading or talking about any experience you've had. That is how we make life meaningful, is by having those connections with others.
Yeah. I don't get to read very often for pure pleasure. I do a lot of reading for work,
right,
which I really love.
Yeah.
But it's not the same as having a couple of days to myself with a book.
Right.
And
I had a whole year of it.
Yeah, lucky,
so lucky
you.
Yeah, I really was.
But
lucky.
It is interesting when you do have that time and then you come back into the world, so to speak, and you're sitting and you're enjoying another person's company and you talk about the book or what that individual is reading. It's really fascinating.
Yes, it is. You can connect with almost anybody over a shared book or a shared experience of reading. Even if it's, I mean, especially with a book, there is the pleasure. But any kind of shared reading of a short story or of a newspaper article, all of a sudden you have that connection with the person. They read it also. They have an experience of having read it. It's this whole literacy really is a gift, and it is a gift that we are, most of us, certainly here in the United States, are lucky to have, and we should exercise it more often because it really is such a pleasure.
Mm-hmm. Let's take another call. A listener in Champaign on line one. Hello.
Hi. I wonder if you've read the book The Women's Room by Marilyn French.
No, I have never read that.
Okay.
I
read that when my family was falling apart. My husband and I got a divorce, and we had three teenagers, and we had a toddler and a baby on the way.
Oh.
And reading that book, it was so similar to my life. It was really hard to read, but I did read it. But when you talked about being afraid of reading certain books,
right,
it reminded me of that experience.
And would you recommend that book? Was it a good book?
Yeah, it's a really good book.
That's great.
It has a lot to do with women becoming aware, you know, consciousness in the 60s and 70s, uh-huh. when suburbia started to not be enough,
yeah.
and staying at home wasn't necessarily what everybody wanted, and the way main character felt really trapped in her role. Uh-huh. And it also reminded me of what my mother-in-law had gone through before she had been divorced. So I think it's a very revealing book
uh-huh.
about what some women experienced, but it was really hard to read.
Yeah.
So thank you for the show. And yeah. is your website readallday.org or .com?
It's .org, O-R-G.
All right, thank you.
Okay.
Thanks for the call. Other telephone calls are invited this afternoon for our guest, Nina Sankovic, 333-9455, the number in the Champaign-Urbana area, toll-free 800-222-9455, 333-WILL, toll-free 800-222-WILL. So after you've read a book, let's say The Women's Room for that caller,
right.
or for yourself maybe The Assault, what do you pick up next? You need a change of pace?
Yeah, I found during my year of reading that I really needed to pace myself in terms of books that kind of tore me apart and then books that, you know, levitated me a little bit out of sadness. For example, I read a wonderful book called Little Bee by Chris Cleave right in the middle of the year, and it was just stunning, a really great book that really made me, though, cry and feel a lot of sorrow and pain. And so I couldn't the next day just go read anything. So I think the next day I chose a fun nonfiction, a fun science fiction book. I don't have the list in front of me, but one that I knew would be completely crazy and a little bit funny and not make me look so deeply inside myself, but would be more of a journey out into the unknown of what if this the world were like this and what if the world was like this. So it was definitely necessary to pace myself, to have a list of books that I knew would be funny or light, you know, at least lighthearted, or maybe deeply mysterious, but in a way that was meant to be, you know, good fun, a good read, and not necessarily a soul-bearing exercise.
Mm. Let's take another call. A listener in Urbana on line one. Hi.
Hi. I'm interested in this wonderful program, of course, and I'm calling to say that we have this wonderful library in Urbana where I was browsing the other day because I have a friend who's a healthcare professional, and I had heard of Rolfing, R-O-L-F-I-N-G, and I didn't know anything about it, and there it was on the shelf in the library, so I brought it home, and I've just jumped here and there in it because I'm not one who sits down and reads for 4 hours, but anyway, I found it fascinating, the level of knowing about how one's body can be shaped by one's mind and vice versa, and how this wonderful woman whose name was, what was her first name, Rolf, and she was a doctor, at least that's the title, Ida P. Rolf, who lived from 1897 to 1979. Anyway, she had a theory. She followed her very special gift of seeing the relationship between how your body is stacked and how it needs to be vertical and how that makes a difference in life. And I just wanted to say that a library is a wonderful place. Ours is a wonderful place, and Rolfing is apparently a very interesting thing. I don't know if you've ever heard of it, but it's great. So the author is Betsy Sise, S-Sugar-I-S-E. Oh, and she herself is a certified advanced Rolfer.
Oh, wow. Thank you.
So,
I have a friend who was very into Rolfing, and
uh-huh.
I always remember she said it was painful but worth it.
Well, that's what these quotes are. They're from Betsy Sise's four teachers who had studied directly with Dr. Rolfe, and she quotes the teachers and their experiences in getting into it, and it's just a very interesting book. So I'm glad you know somebody who has done it. Thank you.
Thanks for the call this afternoon. Opening new doors. One of the books that's on your list that I read, and I interviewed the author on this program, and the book is delightful, and she was a delightful guest, is Crow Planet by Lyanda Lynn Haupt. Here we have a book where we, through the help of Lyanda, we see the familiar in a new light.
Right. Yeah, now that was a great book. I really enjoyed reading it. And that was a book. It was interesting how I came to read it. My best friend from high school, who I had been out of touch with for a long time, she and I came back in touch really through the website, and she recommended it to me, and I read it, and it was an example of what we were talking about before, how I connected with an old friend, and I connected with this author, and I connected with some stuff in myself. And what I loved about that book was that it was very conversationally told. I mean, you really felt like she was a friend of yours explaining how she spent this time getting to really look closely at her semi-urban neighborhood. And it was a great read. I am envious that you got a chance to talk to her on your program.
Yeah, she's a delightful person. She was a great interview, and the book is wonderful. And she's written other books now that I think I've got to go and read some more of her work. She's done a great deal of work on birds.
Yeah. Well, I definitely started looking for crows more, and for a while I didn't see any in my yard, and I became quite worried. But they're back; they're fine, so no worries.
Yeah. I don't think we have to worry about the crows. It seems like they're doing quite.
They do fine.
Well.
Yeah.
Yeah. This is the Afternoon Magazine. Our guest this afternoon, Nina Sankovic. Look for her online at readallday.org, readallday.org. We've got another call coming in, I believe, yes, in Urbana, a listener on line one. Hi.
Hello.
Hi there.
I'm just baffled by the mechanics of how you do this. I generally take a month to read a book, and maybe even more than that if it's complicated a little bit. I'm having trouble understanding how you keep characters separated and even storylines and how you keep your eyes focused on this. I'm just absolutely baffled by how you do this.
Yeah. Well, I did it. You know, I don't do it. I did it for a year. I'm not doing it anymore. I couldn't have kept it up longer. But it really was what. At the very beginning, it was described as a quest. It really was like a quest for me. So it was something that I dedicated myself to every day and really carved out the time and always had a book with me. So if I was waiting for someone in a car, I had the book with me. I could open it up. I'm a pretty fast reader. I read about 70 pages an hour. And I always take notes when I'm reading. I write in the margins. I write in my book. I write on a piece of paper. So that helps me keep things straight. My eyes definitely suffered. I went from very weak reading glasses to now I need much stronger reading glasses. And it was interesting. I got a number of emails from ophthalmologists who said, you have to keep putting eye drops in your eyes. You can't let them dry out. And that was very good advice because you tend to keep your eyes wide open when you're reading and you need to blink to keep your eyes, you know, moist and doing well. So that's kind of a mechanic about the actual reading of, you know, using your eyes. Now that I've stopped my year of reading a book a day, I'm still reading quite a lot because I've gotten into the habit of having a book with me and reading instead of maybe doing something else, instead of going on to the computer and checking something out or watching TV. But after a day of very intense reading, I have to say that I did often say, now I'm sitting in front of the TV and I'm going to watch, you know, my favorite show and just completely zone out. And so there's a place for everything. You know, there's a place and a time for every activity.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I just admire how you did this. And I'm a slow reader, I guess. So I couldn't possibly do this, but I wondered if you had any advice on how to maybe speed up reading for those of us who are slow.
Well, I don't think there's a need to speed up. As long as you're reading and finding the, you know, pleasure in what you're reading, there's no need to do it faster. There's no deadline you have to meet. There's no number of books you have to read this year or this week or this, you know, this decade. Just as long as you're having pleasure in what you're reading, I'd say just take your time. There's no hurry, really.
Yeah, well, I do enjoy learning. I think the more time I spend over some books, the more I get out of them, thinking my own thoughts about
right.
what I'm reading.
Right.
But anyway, I just wanted to see how you did this and tell you I'm really in great admiration for how you did it.
Well, thank you.
Thanks for the call this afternoon. Nina, do you put notes in the margins or do you keep a notepad nearby?
I do both. I like to write in the books that I own,
the library books.
Right. And then I have a little pads of paper all over the place for writing down to myself things that I want to remember. I really like writing in my books, and a lot of people ask me about the Kindle, and I know that you can actually keep notes on the Kindle. For me, I don't think I'll ever become a big user of the Kindle. I like to hold a book in my hand, but I really see the Kindle and the Barnes & Noble Nook and other devices like that as an opportunity for more people to start reading. People who might use the Kindle just to read their newspaper will then say, well, now I got it here, let's see what books I can start. I think it will lead to more reading of more books, and it's really a great opportunity for getting more books out there to generations who are, you know, used to the electronic kind of way of doing things. You know, they will use the Kindle to read a lot of books and carry a lot of books with them, and that's a good thing.
Yeah. Do you think these readers are changing or will change the experience of reading?
That will be interesting to see. For me, I think it has to change somewhat because there's something about holding a book, tucking it under your arm while you go to get something from the refrigerator, you know, remembering not to put it, you know, not to break its spine, but always forgetting. You know, there are so many little rituals associated with holding and reading a book. But I think that there will always be people who want to hold a book when they're reading it. So one will not cancel out the other, but hopefully the two kinds of reading will coexist.
Yeah. Well, I know that I'm certainly doing, I don't have a digital reader, but I do a lot of reading on the computer.
Right.
I read a lot of newspapers on the computer, which is a wonderful thing.
Right.
But I wonder, you know, the Boston Globe online, otherwise how would I be reading the Boston Globe,
right.
Reported that a boarding school in Massachusetts is getting rid of most of the 20,000 books in its library and going digital.
And I don't understand that. Why do you have to get rid of one to have the other?
I don't know. And, you know, the question is exactly that. That's one question. And the other question is, should we care? Should we, you know, be concerned about that?
Well, I think that books are not only, you know, they're I'm trying to think of the word, not documents, but they're evidence of who we are and what we value. And to say that we no longer need that physical evidence, that it can all be online, there's something that sits really badly with me that makes me a little sick, actually. To think that we could do away with the physicality of those pages and the smell and the binding. No, we need books. We need books in their book form, not only in their e-forms.
Yeah. I do wonder, though, with the advent of movies in 3D and television in 3D is coming, it's on the horizon. I wonder if we'll have digital book readers in 3D, and that would certainly be a different experience.
That would certainly be different. Oh my gosh, yeah. That would definitely take away from really what we were talking about before, the pact between reader and writer. I mean, there's a certain activity level that is required of the reader, especially given the hard work of the writer. And really, it's such hard work what they are doing to create these works of literature. There should be, you know, a corresponding level of commitment on the part of the reader to work, not to work because reading is pleasure, but to, you know, to
be
read
there.
The words, yeah, and pull the words yourself out of the page.
Well, now here at the end of the interview, what can you tell us about the experience of writing a book, Tolstoy and the Purple Chair?
Well, writing a book is so much harder than reading one. But it's been a wonderful way for me to go back and take stock of the year and remind myself of why I undertook the year and what I was trying to do. And what I'm really hoping the book, the Tolstoy and the Purple Chair, what I'm really hoping that book does is encourages people to read, to really grab onto books and find the comfort that I found in the beauty and the knowledge and the wisdom. If Tolstoy and the Purple Chair is read by people and then leads them to go out and read more and more, I'll be very happy. That would just be great. And so that's what I'm doing now, is writing that book, and hopefully it will do what I want it to do.
Yeah, well, I hope for you much happiness.
Thank you.
And Tolstoy and the Purple Chair.
Thank you very much.
Nina Sankovic has been our guest in this portion of the Afternoon Magazine. You'll find her online at www.readallday.org.